Hold on, let me position. How's this? Check, check.
Yeah, that sounds really
microphone
good.
Check. 1, 2, what is this? Flow like gravity, never had a cavity.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Voices in Japan podcast. On today's episode, we are joined by a guest, a special guest, our longtime friend, John. On today's podcast, we talk about how safe Japan is, and also the police in Japan. We talk about the zero tolerance to drink driving, the public perception of the police in Japan, police officers never using their guns, how long can the police detain a suspect without charge. John also shares a story of a foreigner being taken into custody in Japan and what happened there. It's a pretty interesting story. Why is the conviction rate of Japan 99%? So yeah, we have some very interesting conversations. Hope you enjoy the show, everyone. Please like and do all that social media stuff. All right, on with the show.
1, 2, 3.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Voices in Japan podcast with my co-host, Burke. And we have a special guest today, our good friend, John.
Hey, everybody. Hi, I'm John.
How you doing, John?
Very well, thank you. It's nice to be here with you guys tonight.
On a Friday night.
Friday night, getting loose.
Yeah. Long week of work. Long week of work.
What's going on?
You've been in Sapporo for, we should probably just let everybody know a little bit about you. So you've been in Sapporo for a while, yeah.
I've been in the city of Sapporo for 12 years.
It's the only place you've lived in Japan, or have you lived in other cities?
Well, yeah. I guess you don't know me as well as you thought, Bert.
I think I do, but I'm just trying to let people
ben,
know.
Ben, where else have I lived?
I know where you've lived. You've also lived in Ibaraki, right?
Well, I know who my true friends are. that's correct, Ben.
Ben always wins the quizzes. Haven't you listened to any episodes? I never get any questions right. So.
No, I don't listen to episodes. I lived for 9 short months in Tsukuba-shi, Ibaraki, it was designated as a science city. Tsukuba, the main features are an atomic particle smasher and the JAXA, Japanese Air and Space Exploration Agency headquarters.
What took you to Ibaraki, by the way?
The contract that I signed with Nova Eikaiwa Corporation.
Oh, so you didn't choose Ibaraki? You didn't
say, No. When I decided I was going to come to Japan, they gave me 3 vague choices about where I wanted to live in the country, and I really knew nothing of Japanese geography. So I knew the big cities, obviously. I knew Tokyo, I knew Osaka, and I knew Sapporo from the beer.
Same with me, man. I only knew Sapporo because of the beer. Yeah.
And so I just decided probably it would be coolest to live closest to Tokyo, because when I came back to the States after my year, I could be like, yeah, I lived in Tokyo. And when I came over here, actually, I found that I was not living in Tokyo. I was living in some weird suburban pseudo science university city.
So you didn't like it?
No, I did like it. I did like it.
For 9 months.
Nah, I mean, it was when you think about it, like coming from where I came in Northern Virginia to Japan, not speaking the language, not having really any bearing on things. Like, it was an easy city to live in initially. It was easy to get from my apartment to work. It was easy to go to, like, the local restaurants. Like, it was easy to navigate. It wasn't overwhelming. I think had I gone straight to, like, Shinjuku or some big ward in Tokyo, maybe I would have lost my mind, because it's crazy.
And did you know about Sapporo before you moved up here, or you didn't know anything when you...
No, I was just telling this story to Ben, actually. So, you know, like many, many English teachers who initially come to Japan, I had a year-long contract. I was only intending to stay for a year. And then after 8 months or so, I was like, well, maybe I should try and live somewhere else before I go back to America. So I decided to come to Sapporo because, you know, it's the northernmost island. There's a lot of mountains. I like mountains. Everybody said Sapporo is like a really green, fresh, cool city. And yeah, so I came up for Golden Week 12 years ago and I never left.
And it is. Sapporo is super green, especially right now. It's it always turns very, very green in June. That's what I really like about June, man. The mountains turn green, all the parks in the city turn super green. I was just looking out the window today at work and noticing that, man. Because that means pretty soon next month, a very special event is going to get started.
The best festival of the year in the whole of Japan, I reckon.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing a preview about that, so...
Alright, well, then I won't ruin...
Oh, no, feel free to... We always mention it, because we can't stop talking about it. Yeah.
But anyway, today we're talking about... What are we talking about? Crime and safety and the police in Japan, or how safe Japan is. Like, Japan is one of the most safest countries in the world, and I feel like it is, out of all the countries I've been to... And I've been to a lot of countries. I think I've been to like 30 countries or so in the world. I would say Japan feels the safest just being here. Whether it is or not is another thing.
I was just going to ask you, have either of you ever felt, I mean, having traveled as much as you have been, Burke, I assume you've traveled equally as much. I've traveled a lot too. Have you ever felt like threatened or unsafe? Like, fearful for your safety in this country?
Never.
From another person?
Never.
Or from, like, another entity? No. I mean, granted, like, natural disasters are a different monster, but...
You mean, like, by someone else?
Yeah. Have you ever felt, like...
A confrontation
like,
or something?
Yeah, like, someone's gonna...
Well, just generally, for me, I've never really had a confrontation in my whole life. Like, I've always managed to avoid it somehow.
Well, it's time to change that right now.
I'm a lover, man. I'm a lover, not a hater, you know, always trying to talk my way out of it. And people just never seem to want to mess with me. I don't know. Maybe because my big friend's behind me most of the time.
Yeah, I've had confrontations in Sapporo, unfortunately, but I've never felt threatened here. Like, two things, like, growing up in Michigan, this town that I grew up in actually had some crime, but it wasn't like a very dangerous place. But
Ann Arbor, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was crime. But I worked in Detroit, and especially Detroit, like they say, you know, you're not supposed to turn down certain streets off the main road, Woodward. Especially at night, you can't go in certain neighborhoods, or you really shouldn't be out past a certain time without expecting some kind of trouble. In fact, I think I felt so safe in Japan now that it's gotten to the point now where I kind of feel like one of those Japanese people who looks at the U.S. and kind of is like, wow, that's such a dangerous country when you hear the news and stuff. When I first came here, I remember Japanese people would talk about how dangerous the U.S. is. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's just like a regular thing. Everyone's used to it. Mm-hmm. But having been here for so long now, when I hear stuff about the U.S. or whatever, I'm like, do I really want my daughter to visit there someday?
Yeah.
Or when we go back and visit, how can we be sure that we're being safe and everything? So,
I as an American, as a Northern Virginia native who was born in D.C., I can totally relate. I'm a father of a five-month-old, and we haven't gone back to the stateside yet, but even just going back to visit... I feel a little bit more on guard than I did when I was a resident of the United States. And, you know, a part of it feels like I've become soft. Like,
right.
Because I don't have to be on guard at all over here. Like, there's never any threat. Really, there's never any threat that anybody's going to, like, give you beef, try and steal your stuff. Although I have had things stolen from me. or confront you, you know, on any like really potentially violent level. And then, for me at least, Northern Virginia, like, driving is a thing. Because, of course, over in Japan...
You mean, like, road rage?
Road rage, but also drunk driving. So, like, in where I'm from, like, you drive to the bar.
Yeah.
And you have a couple drinks.
England's the same. There's always, you know, a designated driver. But, well, in England, you can have a couple of drinks. Like, the legal limit...
Oh, it's the same as in the States, yeah.
...is a couple of drinks. But yeah. In Japan, it's zero tolerance.
Yeah, I've been back a few times, and I felt weird. I'm like, because people are at the bar drinking, and then I know that everyone's going to drive home. And when I used to live there, I didn't even think about it. Like, yeah, go to the bar, have a couple of drinks, then drive home. But being in Japan, where it is zero tolerance, you're just like... get really, really cautious about it. And then when I go back now and people are drinking out of the bar, I'm just like...
Can I trust the road with these people? Or can I trust these people to be on the road with me?
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, my wedding, and I know you guys have already done a wedding podcast, but just as an as a addendum, like when I went... And my Japanese and my American family, we met in Hawaii, which is obviously America. We went out for dinner, having beers and drinks, and I was the guy driving my Japanese family around. And they were like, my wife was like, hey, you know, you've been drinking. Are you gonna? My family doesn't want to ride with you if you've been drinking. I'm like, well, this is America, right? Like, it's okay. And suddenly I was stuck in this conflict between the two cultures. So even now when I go back to the States and I've had a couple drinks, I don't even really trust myself. Even though I don't, you know, perhaps I'm not really that buzzed and I'm fully capable of driving the car safely. Nonetheless, I feel like this Japanese guilt, like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm breaking the law.
It's probably better to have nothing though, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, it's better to drive without having had any drinks.
I mean, at least, like, you know, in England we have this limit, but people always kind of drink to that limit. Most of the time they drink above that limit. But if you have that zero tolerance, at least you're going to try to keep to that zero, even though if you can't, maybe like one beer or something. I want to say something. So in America, like, police are kind of... looked down upon, right? By the public don't like them.
People don't like them. I wouldn't say that. I mean, it's become a very, very...
it's politicized.
Yeah, now it's become a very complex relationship with the police.
Yeah, but like in general, like in England, we call the police, we call them pigs.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't like them.
That is horrible.
I know, but it's the truth, right? Right, people don't really like the police in general. They don't say it, but everyone knows, and the police always get a lot of abuse.
Yeah, they don't like the police until you something happens, and all of a sudden the police becomes
Do you make donut jokes?
Yeah, you make donut jokes.
Do you say oink oink?
Yeah, when they walk past, you go oink oink. Yeah, yeah, and you try to rile them up and get a reaction out of them. But in Japan, it's not like that.
No,
right? People like the police.
But I mean, the way that the police force functions here in Japan is completely different,
right?
And it's also completely in line with the culture. Like, I mean. Obviously, American culture, British culture is much more, I mean, for lack of a better word, wild.
But it's interesting that the police are so different, like how they're perceived in the country.
I think, I mean, so in America, what is the motto of the police, Burke?
To protect and to serve.
Thank you, Ben.
Go ahead.
And in Japan, that is literally the capacity by which they serve. They don't do much more than protecting and serving.
Which is what they should do.
In the States, it's such a wider range of... I mean, you can't even call it service. Like, a lot of police take liberties that they shouldn't. And then, obviously, in American news in particular, like, there's just so much news about police brutality, overreach.
And that never happens in Japan. You never hear of the police.
It really doesn't.
You know, you never hear of, like, police corruption, of... Although, police taking advantage of people.
I mean, and certainly corruption does happen over here. And yeah, the police do take advantage of people over here. But then culturally speaking, this isn't a culture to revolt.
Mm.
Whereas Western culture, our home cultures, are much more likely to fight back and resist.
So none of you guys have had an altercation with the police in Japan?
Not in Japan, but one thing I gotta say is...
What's your definition of an altercation?
Or any kind of meeting? I mean, have you ever... Like, I've met the police. Have you ever been... Have you spoke to the police
My friend, before, I've got friends.
These are good encounters, or bad... Because we actually have a lot of friends in Japan that are police officers. There's a few guys at the dojo, just a few friends in general, former girlfriends, older brother was a police officer. There's a police officer in my wife's family. So I actually know a lot of police officers in Japan, but I've never had any of these bad...
I've had a couple of encounters with the police, but like it kind of... like my encounter shows how safe Japan really is. Because the only encounters I've had is being stopped on my bicycle, which, you know... They think I've stolen this bicycle and I'm just some regular guy. I borrowed this bike from my friend.
Yeah, borrowed. Air quotes.
After I cut the chain off, I just borrowed it.
So I guess it could have been stolen, but it was my friend's bike and then the cops stopped me. I get stopped all the time. I get stopped at least 5 times a year by cops. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. Always. I get stopped all the time. I've never been stopped,
really?
And one time I got stopped twice in the space of 10 minutes. And so the cop stopped me and was like, okay, is this your bike? And I didn't have the paperwork. I didn't have anything because you're supposed to have like paperwork for your bike to prove that. No, it was my friend's bike. So I said, this is my friend's bike. And I just spoke in English. I spoke really fast English so they wouldn't understand because I didn't want to waste time with them. And they basically just gave up. Like, okay, go, just go, you know, because they didn't want to deal with translating. Yeah. And then 10 minutes later, an ununiformed police guy jumps out in front of me. Flashed his badge and was like, police. Like, he was like an undercover police bike police guy. And I'm like,
this was in the city?
This was in the city. This was in the city as well. And then he stopped me again. I was like, I just got stopped 10 minutes ago by your mate. You know? And he's like, okay, go ahead. So then I was thinking, well, if that's how safe Japan is, if they're putting all these people on stopping bike thefts, There's no crime in Japan. You know?
Or
why are they not going out solving real crimes?
That's a very kind way to look at it. A more skeptical person would look at it and say, "That's how racist Japan is for focusing on you."
Yeah, I'm Asian. I look more Japanese than any other Asian. Well,
you were being racially profiled by these police officers.
But the thing was, they definitely thought I was Japanese because they started talking to me in Japanese. Okay. And then as soon as I started speaking English, they panicked, freaked out, and they let me go. And that's how bad they are at policing as well, because they just let me go.
Right.
You know, I could have stolen the bike. But well, they didn't know that.
What it shows is that how unimportant the stop was to begin with.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If they panic when you start speaking English, they're like, sumasen, okay desu, okay.
Yeah.
Daijoubu.
That reminds me of an article I just saw on the internet, and I'll put it on the Facebook page, but it was the SWAT team, I think, was called to a convenience store. I can't remember where it happened, but they were called to the convenience store.
Expired onigiri.
No, to escort a family of ducks out of harm's way. I'll put the article on there. Yeah, okay. So that's kind of the same thing.
All right, so hold on. Now the conversation has segued into the overkill of cop forces. how the police... Okay, basically, what that indicates to me is that the police, while well armed and well prepared and possibly well trained, they just don't have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
So when something comes up, it's like they go on force.
Yeah, there's no crime. There's basically no crime. I think the highest crime rate in Japan is stealing from convenience stores.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So thefts. Yeah, yeah,
so I used to teach a young woman who to look at this girl, you would never think that she was a police, but she was, and her husband is also a police officer. And so I asked her one day, you know, I think she retired from the force when she was like 23 because she was already married. But I was like, did you ever arrest anybody? She's like, yeah, of course. I said, well, who did you arrest? And she's like, I had to arrest an old man for stealing an apple from a supermarket. And I'm like, you arrested him? And she's like, of course we did. He stole from the supermarket. I'm like, okay, well, possibly he was just hungry and confused about the system. And even then, like, I mean, come on. It's an old man and he's stealing an apple. Like, really? Does that merit, you know, pulling out the cuffs and reading the Miranda rights? And
well, and
it did, because what else is she going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, she's not doing her job.
Right. Another thing is just, like, you know how gun crime is pretty big in America? Well, police in Japan have guns, too.
Yeah, they have those old-style pistols.
Right.
Yeah.
Six-shooters.
But usually, like, it's very common in a police officer's career to never pull their gun out.
Whereas in America, they'll pull it within the first week.
Yeah, no, I've seen articles about they had to change the design of the holster because they were being stolen. Or not stolen, but like taken off of police officers in Japan.
Possibly like popped off.
Yeah, like a lot of people were running up to cops. Or like
if in Japan, you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, if altercation would happen, the perp would end up getting the gun from the cop's holster, and the cop's like, give it back.
I'm sure in your extended family, somebody owns a gun.
Yeah, we had two guns in the house when I was growing up.
Okay, you had guns in the house.
Well, that's the thing, like, most people that have a gun has more than one gun.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So my nuclear family did not have a gun, but my mom's brothers, I won't call them nuts because they're actually quite mellow, smart gun owner guys. But both of them had like 30 guns each. They were collectors.
30 yeah. guns.
Yeah. And neither of them was the type, and has so far not gone on killing sprees. But nonetheless, like, yeah, they stockpiled guns. Yeah. Like, having more guns made them feel safer. And it's funny, because when I went on a big hiking trip when I was 25 years old for 6 months, the first question one of those uncles asked me was like, what kind of gun are you taking? And I'm like, man, I'm hiking every day. Why would I have, like, an extra pound of metal in my bag that could possibly explode and bust, you know, destroy my spine? Like, I'm not going to carry a gun.
Yeah.
But that naturally, that's what he thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, I grew up in Idaho for the first 9 years, and that was definitely gun country.
I didn't
know
that.
Yeah.
See, really?
Ben knew that.
Now
knew
I that. Understand I so I much more who, about
I
you.
I know who my good friend is.
Do you know?
Oh, man, I'll talk like this a little bit more. Yeah, maybe you feel a little more comfortable to open up to
a
me now.
A little bit.
All right. Bit.
Do you guys know if you get arrested in Japan, how long that they can detain
3 weeks
for?
3 weeks without any kind of proof, basically, of guilt.
23 days.
Yeah.
Can be
without charge.
Yeah, and that can be extended again.
That's insane, right? Suspected of a crime.
So actually, the president of
Nissan.
Yeah, well, the CEO.
Gosen.
Yeah, this is all coming to light now.
Yeah, Gosen. They did that with him. They didn't have anything on him except hearsay, basically, and they kept extending past 3 weeks.
Is he in detention now?
No,
he's out on bail right now. But the whole situation, I mean, the latest thing that happened is Fiat Chrysler tried to merge with Renault and upset Nissan and everything. But that whole merger, yeah, it was just a big.
All right, so how about we talk about this? So what about Japanese authorities making examples of foreigners in the legal system? So, okay, I have an example of a friend. Can I tell my very local friend story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a very local friend story. So we live in the city of Sapporo, surrounded by mountains, gorgeous snowy mountains. And many of these mountains offer a season pass, which is, depending on which mountain you go to, anywhere from $300 to like $1,000 for a season pass, which, given the quality of snow, is not expensive. Even if you're paying $1,000 for a season pass, like, you know, given whatever your schedule is, you could still go snowboarding or skiing 50 to 100 times. Ben, you and I, we go snowboarding lots and lots and lots.
Burke once a season, maybe.
Burke once every couple of years, but apparently you're still a ninja on a snowboard. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get out together next. Actually, man, we got it. That should be the goal for 2020.
Have we ever snowboarded together?
No,
the three of us.
No.
Never, right?
Not three of us. Yeah. Somewhere with you.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, anyways, we're getting sidetracked. So, anyways, there was apparently. Now, this is all hearsay. I don't know the real details because I'm not directly involved with any of this. But there was a time when apparently a foreign person was making passes that were not 100% legitimate passes. And
season passes.
Season passes, yeah. Okay. So instead of paying $600-$700 for a regular season pass, one member of this illicit community, and there were Japanese people involved as well, it wasn't just foreign people, would buy a pass, they'd scan it, they'd make copies of it, it was legit, it looked very good, and they would use it. Now, apparently, X number of years ago, some foreign guy dropped his pass, and the pass was his own picture, but from what I understand, the name on the pass was not his own name. It was Jack Tripper. Long story short, Jack Tripper gets caught with his fake pass and gets taken down to the police office.
They got his pass. They kept an eye out for him or something like that.
Yeah. That's what I understand. They kept an eye out for him. He was still riding, but after having dropped his fake pass, he got spooked and he bought a real pass. So when they actually caught him on the mountain and they're like, hey, who are you? He had a legitimate pass to show them. And so from what I understand, nonetheless, they're like, well, we'd like you to come downtown and answer some questions.
So this is like the police.
This is like detectives.
All right.
Because they didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
So they take this guy downtown. They take him downtown. And for the next 6 or 7 hours, they interrogate him, trying to squeeze him as best they can for information about, like, why does he have this legitimate pass when he's been named by employees of the mountain for having a fake pass. Anyways, they think he had this fake pass. They think that he's making things illegally, blah, 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 blah. But they just, and actually they had the pass with them, the fake pass with them. Somebody had picked it up. So they had it there and it had his face on it, but it had Jack Tripper's name. And because it was a different name, they couldn't nail him for it. And had it been an American ski resort, they would have nailed him. Like, no doubt about it. They would have just nailed him straight to the wall, and it would have been a done deal. And he probably would have broken. But because it was Japanese detective work, and it just, they didn't know how to turn the screws on him. And I guess being an American himself, from what I understand, he was kind of able to anticipate.
Yeah, but you say that, but they actually have like a 99% conviction rate in Japan because of their interrogation process.
Of Japanese citizens.
I don't know if it's just of Japanese citizens. I think it's because you hear a lot of stories, too, about foreigners confessing to things, sometimes because they don't understand what exactly what's going on, sometimes because they believe they've been tricked. Because one of the things they do during these interrogation processes, apparently, is bring out a prepared confession statement. And some people, after, you know, just being exhausted to death from the interrogation process, will sign it, or foreigners, when they don't know maybe exactly what they're signing, may end up signing it as well. And it's a confession, basically.
I think they tried to do the same thing in this guy's case. But I also know that he requested, he basically, even though he had been in Japan for like 8 years, he requested a translator. And the translator, actually, the translator's English ability was lower than his Japanese ability. Nonetheless, he used that to like leverage his position.
Well, he got pretty lucky because, like, even going, they're not letting him have any contact, or they weren't. He's out on parole right now, but with lawyers, translators.
Oh, same thing for this guy.
You're talking about.
Oh, I mean, he had a translator.
Sorry, they call him Gon-san in Japanese.
Gon-san.
Yeah. So.
He's gone.
So here's the thing, though. Like, they hadn't caught him red-handed. Like, they caught him legitimately armed with a season pass. And so the fake pass that they had with his face was just circumstantial evidence in a case that didn't necessarily directly relate to him. And once he figured that out, he was able to say, like, look, I've cooperated to the best of my ability. I don't know who it is. Probably, you know, your guy knew I was a local at the mountain and stole my picture and put it on your pass. And apparently the cops, at the very end, at the crux of it all, were like, who is Jap Tripper? And he's like, what? Are you joking? I don't know.
Who is number two?
Yeah, exactly. Who is number two? Anyways, he eked his way out of it.
Yeah.
And granted, it sounds like, you know, it was kind of a strategic play between how much information does each party have. But had he not done it, had he admitted to it, there's a high probability that he would have been kicked out of the country.
Yeah, well, that's like all those conviction rates. They just rely solely on confessions.
Yeah.
So they just hold you and they grill you and they just wear you down. And even the people who didn't actually commit the crime, they end up just admitting to it. Right. Like there was this one guy, he...
Forced conviction.
Yeah, he spent 29 years in jail for robbery and murder that he didn't even commit.
Yeah.
In Japan?
In Japan, yeah.
A foreign guy?
No, Japanese guy. So these are Japanese people.
Yeah, but I've heard foreign guys, like, disappearing for 30 days or something, 23 days or whatever it is, forgetting, like...
21 days, yeah.
Yeah, it was 21, 23.
23,
23. Forgetting, like... getting arrested for something, and like you're not allowed to contact anyone.
Yeah, you can't have a lawyer. You can't have a lawyer present.
Yeah, but here's the thing, man. That's like, those are people abiding by Japanese standards of
it's the law. It's the Japanese law.
Yeah, but as an American, I feel like
if you don't get your phone call in Japan.
Yeah, but if you kick up enough dust.
That might be for...
If you kick up enough dust,
that
might you can
be
get that phone call.
For the, like, ski resort police officer.
My point is that the Japanese police force and their whole policing methods are based on, like, responding to a society that is overall, what's the word, compliant. Whereas Americans in British society in general, we are non-compliant and we are highly likely to resist and
culture.
To demand our rights,
culture.
which is to the benefit of the citizenship. It's always in the benefit of the citizenship to challenge authority, because more often than not, authority will seek, and being regular citizens themselves, authority will seek to try and manipulate its power.
Well, yeah, well, this article said that a lot of the confessions that Japanese people make is because it's like based on tradition, how Japanese people aren't used to standing up to authority.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
The police are an authority, so they just confess.
And this guy, who was also under the screw, you know, the very light plastic screws of the police that day, they were telling him, like, well, in Japanese culture, people are more helpful. And he said to them, I'm not Japanese. I know my rights. I have a dinner date with my girlfriend. This is what he said. Again, all hearsay. And that worked. And as soon as he said that, they were like, all right.
They gave up.
Yeah, they gave up.
Well, there has been some crazy crimes happening in the news lately. There's been a lot of these
terrible crimes,
stabbings and stuff. And hopefully it won't go on copycat scenarios, like a lot of gun mass shootings. Gun crimes in the U.S. Happened to take that route. But one that happened recently, just horrible, horrible story, man, about those elementary school kids, mass stabbing of those kids. And then the crazy thing, though, that happened after that was the former minister of, like, the agriculture and fisheries, what's it called? Ministry.
Fisheries and forestry.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't hear about it. What is it?
Well, his son had been living at home for a while, and they had been moved back, and he's one of these hikikomori people that, like, kind of locks themselves in their...
Recluse.
Yeah. In their rooms and doesn't come out, and it was putting some stress on the father and the mother. Father's retired man, probably in his 70s or something, and they had been in a few arguments, and apparently one of the arguments got out of hand, and old Pops stabbed his son in the chest like 19 times or something and killed him. And when he got interrogated about it, he said he was worried that his son was going to commit this same type of stabbing, mass stabbing.
So he stabbed his son to death.
Yeah.
To protect
Japanese society.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was asking coworkers about it, and this dude, this grandfather who, like, stabbed his son to death, like 40, 50 year old son, was like former number two of the ministry. Like, he's not just some, like, you know, regular guy in the ministry or something. He was one of the top guys during his day. And just, like, took his son out.
Yeah. 44. His son was 44
and
years old.
That is also a very Japanese thing to happen. Yeah. It's like preemptive anti-violence through extreme violence.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to make sure that I protect Japanese society by destroying my son.
But, you know, the son, I'm not defending what he did, but his son actually abused his parents. There was domestic violence.
Yeah.
Against his parents.
Against his parents. Against his mom and his father. And also, he actually shouted out, I'm going to kill these kids. Like, they were walking past his house and they were making a lot of noise. And he was shouting out, shut up, otherwise I'm going to kill you. I'm going to stab you. And that's what prompted the father to take action.
That's my chance.
Fine, I got a reason.
Not to make light of the situation.
Isn't that crazy? Because, I mean, a reasonable person in English or American society would call, you know, some kind of authority and be like, look, man, my crazy son is threatening to kill people. He threatened us, and I feel a little hacky myself.
I mean, you think so, but then a lot of these, like, incidents that happens overseas are like, somebody warned them about this person, and look what happened.
Yeah, the police didn't come. I called the police three times. They said they'd come, and they didn't.
Even that stabbing that happened to those elementary school kids, I think somebody said that guy had been kind of flagged for something.
Right. No. He had. He'd been flagged by family members because he had... He was living with his aunt and uncle, his elderly aunt and uncle, who were afraid to confront him and say, like, look, we have to retire to a home where care is provided. Nobody wanted to confront him. And so what they ended up doing was writing him a note and leaving at his door saying, look, sorry, things are changing. We have to go to a place that provides for us better. And he apparently, upon reading that note, had a bit of a freak out and was like, I've always taken care of myself. I've, you know, I leave the house every day and I go buy food for myself, which meant he took the money that his aunt and uncle left him and he walked down to the convenience store and bought a couple onigiri, you know. And yeah, we saw what that guy did.
Yeah.
Are we drawing close
to
that?
Yeah, we are about that time. I think we should call this episode a wrap. So hope everyone enjoyed the episode. We had a good chat. It was very interesting, I think.
I feel like there's so much more to talk about.
There is.
There always is, man.
Yeah, maybe we could cover this in an episode if you ever come back, John, and join us again.
I just might. I had a good time tonight. I might. Who knows?
You might
see me in the next episode.
We are very happy to have you with us, and hope you come back again.
Thanks. Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I had a good time tonight. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. Done.